Okay, good evening everyone. It is 5:30 PM on the 24th of August 2020, and my name is Dean Winter. I'm the Mayor of Kingborough Council, and it's my pleasure to formally open this meeting and welcome all councillors and staff, but also our audience that is watching us live streaming through Facebook. It's a pleasure to have you here. We've got a lot on the agenda tonight, and we're glad to have you with us online. I'd like to let everyone know that this meeting, not only is it recorded on and streamed on Facebook, it's also available in audio form on Council's website, and you can find it there along with the minutes, usually on Wednesday or in a couple of days' time after the meeting. Now I'd like to acknowledge our traditional owners, and so I begin tonight's formal part of the meeting by paying our Council's respect to the traditional and original custodians of this land, the Muwinina people. I acknowledge the contemporary Tasmanian Aboriginal community who have survived invasion and dispossession and continue to maintain and fight for their identity, culture and Indigenous rights. The attendees this evening, we have myself, Councillor Winter, we have Deputy Mayor Councillor Westwood, we have Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Grace, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street, Councillor Wass and Councillor Reet. From our staff this evening, we have our General Manager, Gary Arnold. Our Deputy General Manager is Tony Ferrier. Chief Financial Officer, John Breen. Our Executive Manager of Engineering Services is David Reeve. Our Executive Manager of Governance and Community Services is Daniel Smee. Coordinator of Statutory Planning is Melissa Stevenson. Communications and Engagement Advisor is Sarah Wilcox. And our Executive Assistant is Amanda Morton. We don't have any apologies. We have all of our councillors here with us tonight. Confirmation of minutes. On page one of the agenda, there's a recommended motion that the minutes of the open session of council meeting number 15 held on the 10th of August 2020 be confirmed as a true record. Moved by Councillor Reet and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Motion is carried unanimously. Workshops held since the last council meeting. On the 17th of August, we met and discussed potential land sales. On page two, we have an item called Declarations of Interest. That's an opportunity for any councillor to declare an interest in any matter on tonight's agenda. Does any councillor wish to declare an interest? There are no lights on, so there being none, I'll move on. Transfer of agenda items. Does any councillor wish to transfer an agenda item this evening? Again, there are none, so we'll move on. Questions without notice from the public. As I've been saying every week during COVID, unfortunately we can't have a public gallery here at our meetings due to COVID requirements and the limitations of the room that we sit in. However, there is still opportunity for members of the public to ask questions, and you can do so by emailing kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au, addressing your email to the General Manager and saying that it is a question on notice for a council meeting. That means that your question on notice will be answered in the next agenda of Kingborough Council, and you'll be able to read and see that formally for yourself. So, and there's two examples of that happening since our last meeting, and the first was in questions on notice from the public, which is on page two of the agenda, and it's on rubbish and recycling collection at Woodbridge from Mr. Larry Danette, and there's a response there from Mr. David Reeve. On page three, there's a question on the speed limit on Algona Road, and there's an officer's response there as well. We now move to questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question without notice? Councillor Bastone and then Councillor Grace. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. My first question is regarding the council being financially compensated for the loss of income at the hub at Kingston Park by the builders who are still working on the repair of the slab. Considering it has made the use of the co-working space untenable and it's allowed the co-working space further down John Street to develop in opposition to ours, I was just wondering what's actually happening as far as compensation goes.
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the Chair, there's no attempt to obtain compensation from the builder with regard to the matter that's been raised. All the work that's been done by the builder is in relation to the repair of the concrete slabs. We haven't addressed any issue about loss of revenue within the community hub, and it's worth noting that most of the time that the community hub has been the repairs have been undertaken is during the COVID period when it hasn't been available for public use in any case.
Thank you. My second question is, on the 22nd of June I asked a question in relation to the removal of vegetation behind the Margate Oval on the tramway track. Are site inspections still being carried out, and can the council be assured that all the vegetation removal is in accordance with the approval?
Mr. Ferrier, is that you?
Through the chair, I'll take that one on notice. It's something we have to consult with the planning department about.
Thank you. And my third question is a follow-up to the answer to a question on notice from Mr. Larry Dunnett, which was given by Mr. Reeves, who's here. Is it true that 100 people in Kettering have the ability or the power to determine that no one south of Kettering can ever receive rubbish or recycling collection? That's the first part of the question.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. So our process for extending the collection is based on having a majority of people within a particular area being willing to actually take up that collection. So that's the current process that we actually utilise for doing any extensions. If we're going to extend on a smaller area, then obviously the numbers that would be the majority would also be smaller as well at the same time.
Well, just in your answer, you said it must integrate with the current collection route.
Through you, Mayor, that's correct. So in terms of Kettering being the one that's in between Woodbridge and where the collection ends... Yes,
Conyngham,
yes. Yes, so that would actually preclude Woodbridge actually getting a garbage collection
forever,
or recycling collection service, if it wasn't contingent or if we didn't actually change our criteria for how we'd actually apply that.
Okay, my next thing is it possible to change the criteria?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, it's always possible to change the criteria. I guess the reason why we put that criteria in place, and it's an arbitrary type criteria, is to do with the economies of scale. So clearly the cost of actually providing that service into another location, which isn't contingent with the existing service area there, will come at an increased cost.
Right. Who is my next question, which is also will be to Mr. Reeves via you, Mayor. Who is responsible for the collection of the rubbish from the Woodbridge District School? This school is less than 200 metres from Mr. Dunnett's home.
Mr. Reeves.
Through you, Mayor. Look, I'd have to take them on notice. I'm not sure exactly who does that collection for that one.
Thank you. And the third part is that you say there's a local contractor who picks up a small bags of rubbish for $4 a bag. He does not provide any recycling service despite us asking, and all rubbish is just thrown in the general waste from him. So it is not correct that there is currently a recycling available in Woodbridge. Thank you.
Definitely wasn't a question there at the end. Councillor Grace.
Queries. I've got two issues raised regarding snug. Of course, we know it's been wet. Could Mr. Reeves, Mayor, give us a report on how we can improve the situation down in the lower part of Beach Road, i.e. by the caravan park, football ground, and along the little side road to the boat ramp? And there's a huge amount of water laying there, and it's been going on for years, as we know.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. So councillors would be aware of a recent flood study that was done for Snug there that did identify that lower part of Snug there being susceptible, particularly in the future there, for inundation. So there is some decisions that will need to be made by council in the future as regards that. Obviously, that section of land that's being referred to there is very low-lying. It's very flat in that area there. It is very difficult to actually put in place any sort of drainage or any other means there to try and get the flow of water to actually move away quicker than it does already. And we have other areas in the municipality that are similar. But I guess there's also that bigger picture type thought process that will need to be applied to that section of Snug as well as we go forward with the effects of climate change and so forth.
Thank you for the answer, but I'm still no wiser. But anyway, we'll see what happens. My second question is, again, in Snug. People are concerned about the bushfires coming on, the season of bushfires. We don't organise a fire meeting in each community, as I understand. I can't remember us doing that.
Oh, we have been doing that over the past few years. So there was a major meeting held at the Margate Bowls Club. I think that was before last season. And there was one at
North West Bay Golf Course.
There was one at Taruna. So we have been doing them. I'm not sure.
The question then is, would council hold one at the Snug Hall? Because there's a lot of elderly people that can't travel.
Councillor Grace, we've got our Emergency Management Committee meeting on Wednesday morning. I'd be happy to take that up for you with the committee and ask that one be held at Snug Hall.
Yeah, and the second question relating Snug is, would you also raise the issue about people are very concerned about the Snug Beach being the haven? If a bushfire comes through, that's your escape to the Snug Beach. Again, we should look at that vegetation, because I've been saying, well, if we go to the beach, we'll get burnt to death anyway with the vegetation along the beach. Maybe you could raise that at a fire issue too.
Happy to.
Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Grace. Councillor Midgley and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I have quite a few questions tonight. The first ones relate to the items into the appendix. One was in regards to your communication, the Mayor's communication, the meeting with Maranoa Kingston Neighbourhood Centre regarding Maranoa Reserve on the 4th of August.
Yes, so I met with Mr David Morse, who's the coordinator there at the community house. The Maranoa Reserve is right next to the community house, and I think it's been obvious to a lot of people associated with the community house as well as council for a while that the community house is growing, and it could potentially, one option for it is to grow into the reserve itself. Obviously, that would require a council decision, though, to further integrate it into the reserve. So we've had a discussion about that, and I know that Mr. Smees also had discussions with the House about it in the past, and we'd be looking to the community house to put a proposal to council about how it would like to interact with that reserve in future.
Thank you. Just a couple of points and questions on matters on the Safety Committee, and just a note that I'm always impressed by the minutes and the great work by the Chair, Councillor Westwood, and just congratulations also on the funding for the Road Safety Grant. That's a great initiative. I'm just wondering when is that taking place and what schools? Is it all schools across Kingborough or only specific ones?
Mr. Reid, do you want to answer the question? Or it looks like Mr. Reid is looking at the Deputy Mayor. Deputy Mayor, do you want to answer the question?
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, it's for all 16 of Kingborough's schools, and we're hopeful that it will start at the beginning of Term 4, subject to getting some component parts from Victoria.
Great, thank you. Another question in regards to an item in the regarding the crime statistics. I guess it was quite sad to see that there is quite an increase in crime across the municipality, and I'm wondering at all if there was any speculation for significant growth in some areas, especially like Huntingfield and the Kingston postcodes. If that was discussed at all, or yeah, there was quite a significant growth in some of them, from 300 to 550 for the year.
Deputy Mayor, I think the question is, was that discussed? I know you're not a police officer and don't have any expertise, though, so I'm sure you'll do your best.
No, I probably can't comment on that. Some of the statistics are for the Kingston Division, though, which includes Huonville as well as Kingborough. So happy to take any detailed questions on notice.
Thank you. Yeah, just in that table there was quite a significant growth in some areas. Just a note, of late I've seen quite a lot of posts on social media in regards to roadside rubbish and many community members actually taking initiatives to pick that up themselves. I'm wondering at all, what is Council's role to play in regards to roadside rubbish? I know along Howden Road there's such an increase. Recently someone's done Algona Road, and I guess there's a lot of places in the municipality that there is a lot of roadside rubbish. Do we do anything in regards to that?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, certainly if there's any service requests that are put in there for any roadside rubbish there, then we can chase up on those ones there. We do regular patrols in different areas there, but there's also going to be some areas which can be hotspot areas as well, which we can actually put a little bit more attention to. And clearly we support a number of the other events that might happen as well, such as the clean-up days that are the national events as well. So by all means, we're happy to take any requests for any additional patrols in particular areas.
Thank you. So just to clarify, if community members do notice some hot spots, they just ring the General Council number?
Mr. Reeve.
Yeah. Yep.
A question in regards to the Channel Highway Margate to Kingston study. Have we heard any more information regarding that?
No, we have not.
That's disappointing. In regards to the city deal, I noted that DSG was going to do an audit of bus shelters. I'm wondering if we have any plans or timelines in regards to when this will happen.
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the chair, no, we don't. We had a meeting today with Department of State Growth, and they have yet to commence that work.
Thank you. And just this afternoon, actually, prior to council, I was driving along Gormley Drive, and I'd say that would be the winner for the most potholes in Kingborough at the moment, due to the significant amount of rain. It is, it's not, like a, it's, you know, a bit of a joke, but it is quite a safety matter where you have to swerve quite significantly to avoid some of the potholes. I understand sealing is a very big expense and not likely in the budget, or perhaps it could be in a couple of years. But I'm just wondering in regards to any sort of fix at the moment, because it is due to the heavy rains, it is quite significant.
Could be Mr. Smee or Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, we have got some money that we put aside through the grant made available by the federal government, the $600k grant for that, to do some resheeting work on Gormley Drive, which will happen probably sometime in the next couple of months. But in the meantime, I can certainly get the crews to go down there and repair any of the worst ones.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova. And then Councillor Grace.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mayor. I've got two questions, and they both relate to COVID-19 outbreak preparation. My first question is Kingborough Council able to purchase a stockpile of face masks that we'd be able to give to residents for free if there was the unfortunate outbreak in southern Tasmania, if we were to experience an outbreak here?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, Council has purchased a quantity of masks, but they are for emergency use and primarily intended for staff. Purchasing a stockpile for the community is not something that we have given consideration to, and I'd imagine, given the expense, it would be something that we'd need to bring to Council for a budget allocation and consideration.
Thank you. My second question, also about COVID preparation. Recently, lots of conservationists have been reporting that there's now a glut of discarded single-use plastic face masks and gloves washing up on shorelines and littering the seabed. I mean, this is a particular problem in Victoria, obviously, but my question is, were there to be an outbreak again in southern Tasmania, have council staff noticed this problem of single-use plastic, either gloves or masks, in our municipality, and what can be done to mitigate the risk of single-use plastic pollution more generally?
Mr. Smee, or do you want to take it on notice?
Through you, Mayor, we've certainly had no reports to date of that being an issue in our local area, but as to strategies that we could employ if that was to be an issue, I'd need to give consideration to that, and it's a broader issue involved in waste management and public education as a whole, so I'll take the second half of that question on notice. Thank you.
Councillor Gray.
Sorry, Mayor, I just have two quick ones. Somebody explain why Council graded the road at Kettron down to the marina, which is a private road, I understand, unless it was on a private works order?
Mr Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Look, I'm unaware of that one, but I'm happy to take them on notice.
Thank you. And just the other one I've been asked, Mayor. With a back room out here, when is it likely that we could still entertain some public to our meetings?
This is me.
Through you, Mayor, until such time as the 1.5 metre restriction is lifted, the issue for us is we never know how many members of the public will attend. So, yes, we could open up the back room, but it would only be for a limited number of the public, and then we're in a situation where we have to allow some in and deny access to others. So the current arrangement in which any member of the community can tune in online is considered to be the most fair and equitable under our current circumstances.
Okay, there are no other lights on, in which case I'll move on from questions without notice. Questions on notice from councillors. Question one is on the Sustainable Hobart Action Plan from Councillor Cordova, with a response there on page 3. Question two is the Kingborough Climate Change Action Plan from Councillor Cordova, with an officer's response there as well on page 4. Question three is on the cool store Kettering from Councillor Bastone. There's an officer's response there from Ms Tyler Moore. Question four is on the general store at Woodbridge from Councillor Bastone. A response there from Ms Tyler Moore. Question five is on the Bruny Island Gateway Cafe from Councillor Bastone, with a response from Ms Tyler Moore. Councillor Grace, in question six, is Councillor Grace asking about the cafe at Electrona, with a response from Mrs Tyler Moore. And question seven is on the bus shelter at Conningham Road from Councillor Grace, with a response from Mr Johnson. The next item on the agenda is motions of which notice has been given, but at the time the agenda was compiled, no notices of motion have been received. The next item is petitions still being actioned. At the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been were still being actioned. Petitions received in the last period. At the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. And so we move to page 7 of the agenda, which is the petition to amend sealed plan 171047, affecting land at 361 Redwood Road, Kingston, for PDA surveyors on behalf of On Horizons Proprietary Limited. There is a recommended motion on page 19. I'm sorry, I'm just catching up with on my part of the agenda. On page 19. Would anyone like
I'll
to
move the motion on page 19 to approve?
Councillor Grace would like to move that motion on page 19, the recommended motion. Would anyone like to second it? Looking for a seconder? If not, would anyone like to move an alternative? Councillor Street.
I'll move an alternative motion if there's no seconder for the recommended motion.
There isn't, so...
Which is that... Sorry, just let me bring up the wording. That the Council resolves that the request to amend sealed plan number 171047 by deleting the covenants in relation to lot 96 be refused.
Second by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Street.
Mayor, Council has significant power to amend sealed plans under section 103 of the Local Government Building and Miscellaneous Provisions Act 93. Before moving to the substantive application before Council, I want to place on record at this point my view that section 103 of the Act is in dire need of reform. Mayor, there's a distinct lack of detail within the Act with respect to the scope of Council's power, the matters which Council should take into account in making a decision, about a petition to amend a sealed plan, who is an interested party under the Act, how hearings by council must be conducted, when the decisions must be made by council, how compensation for landowners should be calculated, and I could go on. A decision of council under this section is only reviewable by the Supreme Court, and there's very little assistive case law to guide a decision by council. Mayor, council's faced with an impossible task where its discretion is almost absolute, and the guidance provided by the Act about using that discretion is almost naught. Mayor, this is an application that seeks to have a restrictive covenant or some restrictive covenants that have been entered into with each and every registered proprietor on the sealed plan expunged. I will always be extremely cautious about expunging such restrictive covenants because of the indefeasibility of title of the registered proprietors who have acquired lots on a sealed plan. That's to say that when a person acquires a piece of property, they're entitled to rely on the documentary title as evidence of all the relevant interests that that property is burdened by and benefits from. The restrictive covenants that the petitioner seeks to remove from the sealed plan are notations on the title to each lot on the sealed plan. The other lot owners on the plan are entitled to the benefit of that covenant, particularly those that no habitable building or structure would be constructed on that lot, nor any of the vegetation on that lot removed. The benefits to other lot owners are a little ethereal, but they do exist, being that no further development of a habitable nature would ever be allowed on that lot. In any circumstance such as this, where even one objection is maintained from one of the registered proprietors on the sealed plan, I'm going to be reticent to vote for an amendment to that sealed plan, except in circumstances, or except in special circumstances, I should say. For me, those circumstances would include a significant passage of time between when the plan was sealed and when the petition to amend occurred, a change in the character of the property or the neighbourhood since the plan was sealed, a situation where all interested persons agree to the removal of the covenant, or that nobody would be affected by the removal adversely if it were to go ahead. I don't think that any of those circumstances arise here, especially in a situation where the sealed plan is relatively new. Mayor, the petitioner provided much evidence about the reasons for including the covenant on the sealed plan and the negotiations with the Australian Antarctic Division and the owners of the land upon which the Antarctic Division is situated. I don't think these matters are relevant to my decision to refuse the application, and I think the reasons I've given previously are sufficient to support a decision to refuse the application. Ultimately, the restrictive covenant in question is a covenant with the other owners on the plan, not with the Antarctic Division or with the Antarctic Division's landlord. If what was intended was a covenant benefiting the Antarctic Division or their landlord, there were other mechanisms for this to occur, and it is not what occurred. I believe Council must now consider the petition based on the covenant between the petitioner and the other owners on the plan, of which some have objected, and on that basis I must vote for refusal of the petition to amend.
No other lights at this stage. Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Mayor, and I thank Councillor Street for his contribution. This particular case, like many others like it, it brings me no joy, because no matter which way a councillor falls in their judgment, they stand to upset one or more of the valued and important stakeholders. In this case, the subject lot that we're looking at 361 Redwood Road, Kingston, was created in 2014 under subdivision DAS 2012-14 with an area of 4,552 square metres, a little over an acre. And in 2014, a covenant was placed on this land to not remove any tree without the prior consent of Kingbrook Council, and also to not construct any habitable building or other structure. So immediately the key question that comes to mind is, are there any special circumstances here? Is there a need, for example, as in the provisions of the Local Government Building and Miscellaneous Provisions Act 1993, is there a need to bring the plan into conformity with a change in the rights and duties of landowners, for example? The suggestion here that's before us is to refuse the sealed plan amendment. And the key questions here are are about the construction of habitable dwellings or other structures. So to take us back into the history of this, when this subdivision was approved in 2014, many of the current landowners purchased their lots in 2016 and then constructed dwellings in 2017 onwards. The original purpose of the covenant was, well, the condition required that the covenant provided for the protection of the residential amenity of the adjoining lots, as well as ensuring that the existing operations on the adjoining commercial lot to the north, AAD, were not compromised. The residential amenity to which this covenant referred was for the adjoining lots, which have now been subsumed into lot 96. So in my mind, there's still an open question as to whether the protection for residential amenity for those adjoining lots extends to those lots owned by the respondents who opposed the amendment to the sealed plan. However, some of the issues that were raised by respondents who did oppose this amendment on the covenant have raised concerns that include issues relating to property value, noise and traffic, and it's worth noting at this juncture that the traffic assessment did not support the traffic concern and that it appears that there's little evidence to support that particular claim about traffic becoming a problem at this location. But it's worth noting that under the general residential current zoning, multiple dwellings can be approved with a minimum lot size of 325 square metres. So this lot in question being a little over an acre, in theory it is conceivable, albeit unlikely, that up to 13 units could fit on this lot that we're talking about. Much more likely that it would be less than 10 lots, but still it's worth considering. At the time of purchasing their lots, respondents were advised by real estate agents that the covenant would mean that there would be no tree removal or construction of structures or habitable buildings on the lot in question. And I place significant weight on this aspect of the case. They selected their properties largely due to lot 96 being some kind of a buffer. There's a quote in the report here that says, at the time of purchase, the agent specifically cited the covenant that was in place as a selling point. Now, I want to make very clear that the reality is that this area is not, nor ever was, public open space. So that's important to point out. But an open question remains that if a covenant can be placed on a property in 2014 and then used as a selling point for adjoining lots, and then with the stroke of a pen can be removed 6 years later, what kind of, for want of a better word, moral hazard does that represent? If in a given municipality covenants are removed haphazardly or nonchalantly under non-extraordinary circumstances for non-extraordinary purposes, does that not dilute the authority, the potency, the efficacy of all of the other covenants within the municipality? And I'm a little concerned about what signal it sends to both developers and households that if the council undermines the sternness of their covenants in their own jurisdiction by showing lenience in removal or amendment of covenants, I think that's kind of a thin end of the wedge kind of situation. And the question then becomes, does the draft Part 5 agreement regarding an acoustic time barrier... Can I have 3 more minutes?
Yeah, move and a second for that.
Also move.
Moved by Councillor Fox and seconded Councillor Westwood. The motion is that Councillor Cordova be given 3 additional minutes. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against... Motion carried. Councillor Cordova, 3 minutes.
Thank you. I won't need that full 3 minutes. But the question about the noise is it sufficient reason to discharge the original intention of the covenant to provide for the protection of residential amenity to those adjoining lots? This question of noise and privacy. Now, following the first hearing, a report was prepared by Council's Planning Department which included a recommendation to refuse the amendment to the sealed plan on the basis that, quote, there is no significant change to the circumstances that existed when the covenant was originally created as part of the subdivision application. Subsequently, the addition of a draft Part 5 agreement requiring the construction and maintenance of an acoustic barrier has led, I guess, Council planning staff to consider that enough has changed this time around to warrant the changing of the recommendation. This council will make its determination about the amendment of this sealed plan not under LUPA but rather under its head of power granted under the Local Government Building and Miscellaneous Provisions Act, sections 103 and 104. The council may amend a sealed plan on the application of any person having an interest in the land subject to the plan. So there's no question about whether or not council can amend the plan, of course, that's why we're here, but the question is, should we in this circumstance? Is the situation and circumstance special enough, extraordinary enough, to warrant changing it? Any person affected by the proposed amendment may be heard in support or opposition, and council is charged with the responsibility to determine this matter on its merits. And the weight a councillor gives to a given aspect of this case will subjectively affect their determination on the merits of the proposed amendment to the sealed plan. Now, in this case, the weighting in the report, in the original report that we saw, places greater emphasis on privacy and noise, but doesn't place as much emphasis on some of the other issues which are brought before the report, which include surrounding property owners' interests, vegetation protection, and the risk of undermining the robustness of other covenants. So I've given this proposal a lot of consideration, and in my assessment, I don't agree with the recommendation to approve the request, and that's why I'm proud to second this motion that's before us now. Thanks.
Councillor Grace.
Well, I can assure you, Mayor, with not getting a seconder, I'm not going to go on with a long, drawn-out issue. All I'm going to say is this, that I have correspondence where people have asked us to vote in favour of the amendment, but I have known for some time, getting the feeling round councillors, that this was never, ever going to get off the ground anyway. So that's all I need to say, Mayor.
No other lights on. Councillor Street, would you like to sum up?
I think between us, Councillor Cordova and I have said everything that needs to be said.
Agreed. The motion, as moved by Councillor Street and seconded by Councillor Cordova, is that Council resolves that the request to amend sealed plan number 171047 by deleting the covenants in relation to lot 96 be refused. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Street, Bastone, Reet, Westwood, Fox, Cordova, Midgley, Wass and Winter, and those against is Councillor Grace. The motion is carried. Next item is Legislative Council Inquiry Taswater. Starts on page 69 and there's a recommendation on page 72. Would anyone like to move or second this motion? Councillor Fox, seconder. Councillor Westwood, Councillor Fox.
It's a long time since I've read this thoroughly, but I do support the motion that this go to the LGAT because we have had considerable concerns about our lack of dividends and uncertainty about the future of income from Taswater, which we've been relying on for our long-term financial plan. I would appreciate it if any staff member would like to add to my comments.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Fox, for the opportunity. Councillors, in essence, the main issue that we find ourselves facing is the uncertainty of a dividend in the foreseeable future from Taswater. I'd base that on the fact that in the lead up to finalising end of financial year accounts for last financial year, 30th of June 2020, Taswater continually advised that it was probable, notwithstanding COVID implications, but still probable that they would produce a net profit before tax circa $15 million. And that indeed is what transpired. Fast forward to this financial year, where the latest forecasts from Taswater are that at best they may break even, at best. Bear in mind that only a couple of months ago they advised all owner councils that due to the COVID situation, they were unable to pay the final two quarters dividends for the last financial year. That was a distribution of $10 million amongst the 29 council owners. They couldn't pay a dividend when they produced a net profit of $15 million. I find it untenable that they are still saying that they are working towards possibly paying a dividend this financial year when they're advising the council owners that at best they will break even. That brings into question not only the long-term financial plan for this council, but for the other 28 councils in the state. My understanding is that we have adopted probably, arguably, the most conservative approach in this regard, insofar as councillors will recall that in the recent budget-setting deliberations and workshops, Mr. Breen and myself suggested that we should bank on no dividend this financial year. Across the state, it is a mixed bag, and I know a number of councils are expecting a dividend, but as I said at the beginning of my contribution, councillors, it would be quite frankly gobsmackingly amazing if Tazwater were able to produce even a token dividend this financial year, given the most recent financial advice they've been giving to us in our quarterly briefings.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask a clarifying question in regards to the recommendation. So Kingborough Council will be providing information to LGAT to inform the Legislative Council's inquiry, and will we also be providing our own independent submission?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, Councillor Westwood, that is the intention of the recommendation.
Councillor Grace, and then Councillor Wass, and then Councillor Bastine. Councillor Grace.
What brought the inquiry on, for one question I have?
I understand that the inquiry was brought by a northern-based MLC, whose name, one of the, and it was on the basis of some feedback, some community feedback, and there was a vote in the Legislative Council about whether this inquiry would be held, and that vote was carried. The terms of reference, I think they're listed in the agenda, aren't they? So the terms of reference are quite broad, but they allow the Legislative Council to have a look at the way that the Tazwater has been operating, particularly after the ownership changes of a couple of years ago.
The other issue then, hopefully they'll be looking at why any council gets a dividend, because we're not getting a dividend given to us. We're not that stupid. We know that when something's given to us, somebody's got to pay for it. And we, the ratepayers, have to pay for the dividends that they give us. They're not giving it to the council free of charge. The ratepayers have certainly paid for the infrastructure. A lot of the infrastructure back in my time was dollar for dollar, Commonwealth government grants, etc., etc. Then the Tasmania Metropolitan Water Board was set up, and we got a lot of money from the Metropolitan Water Board to improve our stuff. So what I'm trying to say is the best issue of all is for Tazwater, is for the government to take Tazwater completely over like they plan to and get rid of councils out of the way. And that's what they should be looking at. I don't know what it's got to do with the LGAT, because the LGAT, I'm surprised the power the LGAT has when it doesn't represent the normal ratepayer. It's only representing yourself and the general managers in all cases. They won't even talk to ratepayers. If ratepayer rings them up on any queries, they don't want to know about it. But I don't know what, and will we see the actual report that is prepared by this council before it goes to the Legislative Council?
The motion's quite specific, and it says that both the feedback to LGAT and the submission to Legislative Council inquiry will be in line with the report. So the points that the General Manager's made in the report will be formatted as a submission as opposed to a council report, and then forwarded both to the Local Government Association but also to the Legislative Council inquiry. So it'll be
quite
what's here is what will be communicated generally to the Legislative Council.
Thank you.
Councillor Wass.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I think Councillor Grace might be looking at through rose-coloured glasses because it's not quite as he says. If you go back to when Taswater or Southern Water was commenced and our assets were transferred over, there was over $100 million of Kingborough assets owned by the residents of Kingborough that were taken away from us and put into Southern Water, which then became Taswater. We have not, in a real world, received a dividend in relation to market rates since the water authorities were established. And there were two options. One, the setting up of Taswater could have meant simply, and as was set up as one option, that the member councils would get a dividend, as I said, not to the standard it should be, but at least a dividend, which in our case was just shy of $2 million per annum. The other alternative, of course, would have been for the state government to buy each council out and to provide their own water authority, statewide or regional, as was commenced. I have real concerns, and particularly, I think, 4 or 3 years ago, this council was the only council that opposed the MOU with the state government, and all the other councils agreed that, yes, that was the way to go. And state government became a member of Taswater or a part owner of Taswater, and no money changed hands. So again, our percentage, if you like, was devalued. The concerns that this council had at that stage was in the papers presented by the then chair and by Taswater indicated that Taswater was going from a very profitable and good return on capital water authority to one that you must consider whether or not it was going to be viable into the future. And if such things were to occur in the future, which of course we didn't talk about COVID-19 as one of them, then the pressure, or the added pressure added to that water authority, could in real terms make it insolvent. And that's why I think it's important that, five, the effect of Taswater's dividend policy on local government revenue should be looked at, because we're the ones, and as I said in our case, originally when it was taken, over $100 million, that has been revalued on two separate occasions, and the last time, I think, and the General Manager will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think our valuation of our component now is down to about $80 million. The most important part is number seven, the effectiveness of the business operations. And I think the MLC need to look into that, and I fully support what Legat are doing, because Legat really need to, if you like, represent all the councils in the state, which represent all the ratepayers within the state, to, if you like, have the MLC investigate, come back with a solution, and then when we have that solution, for us to have a say and for the people to have a say. So I certainly endorse and support the recommendation and urge councillors to do the same.
Councillor Bastone.
Thank you. I just have a question. If we have been getting these dividends as part of the owners, does it also follow that if they're in financial trouble, we will end up having to pay money to them, extra money over and beyond the fact that we're not getting a dividend? Is this a likely scenario?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Bastone, that's a very interesting question. The shareholders' letter of expectation that all 29 council owners have with Taswater, from memory, does not have a provision that would cover that particular occurrence. The way that the shareholders' letter of expectation was constructed paid attention to the dividend, which was always at the discretion, the sole discretion, of the independent board of Taswater, but I can't recall any provision in that that related to effectively a request on the 29 or now 30 owners of Taswater for an additional contribution given any circumstance.
No other lights on. Okay, in that case, Councillor Fox, would you like to sum up? Councillor Fox is indicating no. So the motion is moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Westwood is that Council resolve to provide a copy of this report to Legat and put a submission to the Legislative Council inquiry into the operations of Taswater as generally outlined in this report. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion is carried unanimously. We move on to the page 73, which is petition road safety in Conyngham and Lower Snug. There's a recommended motion on page 76. Would anyone like to move? Moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you very much, Mayor. And what we're looking at here is a report in response to a petition requesting Council to assess community safety issues and implement appropriate road safety measures such as warning signs, traffic calming, localised road widening and establish clear parking zones in Conyngham and Lower Snug. I think this is one example of how good it is to work closely with local community organisations where there's a shared common purpose of improving neighbourhood amenity and improving safety and improving our municipality. So it's with great pleasure that I move this motion. Some particular things that we need to look at is when it comes to safety, there's still more investigation that needs to be done, but I guess on the prima facie, so far there have been a couple of incidents of road vehicle incidents. One involved a light goods vehicle which missed the bend at the western end of the seawall at night. Inattentiveness was listed as the crash factor and resulted in property damage only, and the other crash was a head-on crash at the bend near the jetty and was reported by the public after the event. It was listed as property damage only. So even though there have been no reported crashes on Davies Road or Conyngham Road in the last 5 years, and therefore it can be said that there's a low crash history, what we're trying to do is make sure that we mitigate risk and that we improve the neighbourhood networks, and we shouldn't wait until something terrible happens before we do that. But what I found interesting about this report is that the investigation of where traffic calming measures were taken in similar areas, such as Clifton Beach, Cremorne, Hawley Beach, they used speed humps at regular intervals along the primary foreshore roads. And whilst these speed humps can be effective, it's worth noting that they have a lot of disadvantages. So delayed response times for emergency vehicles, increased noise levels for people living nearby, increased wear and tear for local residents who often have to travel several times a day on those roads, and it can be painful to drivers with or passengers with certain injuries or disabilities, and they're dangerous if traversed at high speed. So it's quite clear that there's no one-size-fits-all and it requires further consideration. But what I think this report does speak to is that the section of Old Station Road along the seawall, which was reconstructed in 2002, Council can consider some localised widening of the verge in parts of that section of road, and Council can also work with the Conyngham and Lower Snug Community Association, CALSCA, in order to identify some road widening and stormwater upgrades. So it's worth noting from the report as well that along a narrow section of Davies Road between the Channel Highway and Needlewood Road, that's already in the five-year capital works program. So without labouring the point, it's a good report, and it speaks to the fact that we're willing to work really closely with local expertise, local knowledge and local community organisations to progress some common goals. Ultimately, what we want is further investigation to assess current traffic volumes and speeds within the Conyngham and Lower Snug areas, an audit of existing signage in Conyngham and Lower Snug, in the road network there, to make sure that we've got all the appropriate warning signs, consultation with CALSCA to identify wildlife hotspots, and also consultation with CALSCA to identify locations where parking controls should be necessary. Ultimately, if major works are deemed necessary, then we'll need to look towards traffic calming projects to having a bid within the five-year capital works plan. So I'm very pleased to be moving this motion, and I just want to commend the author of the report, council staff, and the level of engagement that councillors have had with CALSCA and also CALSCA themselves for putting forward this petition originally. Thank you, Mayor.
Councillor Grace.
Yeah, whilst I like the report, but what I'd like to point out is the fact that this is a good outcome and for council to work hand in hand with the community. But what we need to do is for the community to work back with the council, because if you remember back before your time, Mayor, we nearly lost the money on the lower part of the road going into Conyngham because every time our engineer put something forward, there was a massive outcry. And it just got to the stage where even councillors were sitting around thinking, well, what can we do with these people? Let's take the money elsewhere. And finally, we got the message through. And yes, we need to work. And I think the biggest point about probably what's missing in this report is the fact that it is a terrible road. We did upgrade Davies Road. That was the reason we upgraded. That was to allow the work to undertake on the bottom road, which is called, I call it Conyngham Road, but it's Old Station Road, yeah. That is appalling along there at times, and it wouldn't cost a lot of money to fix the problems that are there on those corners, etc., where people are running off the road into the mud and slush that's there. That needs fixing badly. We were told at the time Old Station Road was being constructed that big corner where the boat mooring thing is, the boat shed, that we were going to put up guard railing there, and that worked out that we couldn't because the amount of erosion on that corner. And it has got worse, that corner. I was around there a fair while ago, and I stopped and looked, and the erosion's got worse. So there's no way you could put the guardrail up because there's nothing there to hold it. I'm looking forward to work with the people for the rest of the time I've got in council, but I think, Mr. Mayor, that maybe Mr. Rees may take on notice, and the general manager. And again, I'll raise this, that particular road needs regular supervision from one of our road supervisors to drive through, have a look and fix up some of the minor things that turn into major things, if that makes sense. But I'll support this recommendation.
Thanks, Councillor Grace. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I haven't got much to say, only to note that I think the recommendation is very much a community inclusive response, and I thank the petitioners for organising it and keeping Council up to date, and I hope that some of the matters that Councillor Grace has asked in regards to working with the community, the officers involved, can be kept up to date and aware of the local matters.
Okay, there are no other lights on. Councillor Cordova, would you like to sum up? Motion moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Midgley is that council officers undertake further investigation in consultation with the Conyngham and Lower Snug Community Association to consider options to mitigate the road safety concerns of the petitioners. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, motion is carried unanimously. We move on to the page 77, which is Kingborough Waste Services appointment of new director, recommendation on page 78. Move and a seconder, please. Councillor Grace would like to move, seconded by Councillor Bastone. Councillor Grace.
I have no problem with this. I wish Mr. Ferrier well in his retirement. Maybe I should go with him. It sounds pretty interesting. Yes, and of course the appointment of Mr. Tim Jones, we know that he will also do a fantastic job.
Thanks, Councillor Grace. Any other comments? If not, the motion is that Council A accepts the resignation of Mr. Tony Ferrier from his existing position as an internal council appointed non-executive director of Kingborough Waste Services. B appoints Mr. Tim Jones as the replacement council appointed non-executive director of Kingborough Waste Services with his term to commence on the 1st of November 2020. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Move on to page 79, the financial report of July 2020, recommendation on page 80. Move, looking for a mover of the recommended motion, Councillor Westwood, and seconded by Councillor Mitchelly. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a report to provide the July 2020 financial information to Council for review. I guess we're early in the financial year, generally tracking in accordance with the forecast budget. However, I do note that rates income is forecast to be $80,000 over the forecast already. I had one question in relation to green waste. It says the green waste collection was $6,000 under budget. I'm just wondering why this is.
Mr. Breen or Mr. Reeve, which are?
Through you, Mayor. Essentially, we make an estimate on where we felt that the green waste collection income was going to land, while it was $6,000 out, given the size and the fact that it was the first estimate, I was reasonably happy with that budget outcome.
No other lights on. Oh, Councillor Sweet.
Question, Mayor, in relation to the capital works expenditure. I know it's only early in the financial year, but any indications as yet as to whether or not COVID is affecting our ability to get works conducted and money out the door?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. We've been reasonably lucky in terms of being able to still maintain our contractor base through the COVID period there, so we haven't seen a huge effect through that period there. The main effect that we've actually had is for any of the interstate contractors there, so we've had some delays in some of the projects, such as Conningham Toilet Block, where we've struggled to actually get the contractor on site there because they are interstate. But we're expecting that hopefully the effect for COVID there is going to be fairly minimal for the rest of the year.
Councillor Midgley and then Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. I also have a couple of questions. The point on page 80, 5.1, Council's underlying result for July 2020 is 536K of a budget due primarily to 234 in recurrent grants and expenditure amounts. So I'm just wondering, we've got some of them are in regards to grants, but what is the other remaining from that 536 amount?
Mr. Breen.
Yes, through you, Mayor. Essentially, so we had the grants that were over budget because of changes to the new accounting standard, which meant that we carried those forward. Essentially, the budget amounts that are under budget at this stage are essentially materials and services and other expenditure, and some of these tend to relate to timing differences. One of the key ones was the Legat sub. Subscriptions. We budget for those in July. By the time we got the account, it came in and we'll pay it in September, and that was a bit over $60,000. So quite clearly, particularly at the start of a financial year, you will have some timing differences which will cause you to come in under budget.
Thank you very much. And just a couple of questions actually in regards to the capital expenditure. And I understand, as another councillor said, you know, we're just at the beginning of these projects, but I'm hoping it's okay just to look specifically at a few in regards to page 96, Bruny Island Tourism Grant, Alona Footpath. I'm wondering at all, is that footpath going to be a shared footpath for bikes and walking?
Mr. Reeve. Or Mr. Ferrier, sorry. Oh, I can answer.
Through you, Mayor. It's certainly a footpath that can be used by bikes and by pedestrians as well. The width of the footpath won't be as wide as obviously the one we've got from Margate to Snug, just based on the fact that there's some restrictions there, but there certainly won't be anything to stop any cyclists actually using that path.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Reeve, I think it's in regards to the width of the footpath actually makes it safe for multi-use, so I guess I was wondering if there is enough money for that width of the footpath to account for a shared use?
Through you, Mayor, it's actually really more of an issue in terms of actually the area there and what you can actually fit in as compared to wanting to fit in a wider path there. So we are a little bit constrained, but we certainly won't be closing off to any sort of user.
Thank you. Page 97, there's about 2,000 in regards to the Gormley Drive extension, Spring Farm Link Road. I'm just wondering at all if that could have some more explanation, please, Mayor.
Mr. Reeves.
Through you, Mayor. So if councillors recall, we've done a fair bit of work in that precinct there looking at a number of the different extensions in that area there, so the Spring Farm extension there, but we've also looked at the option of Gormley Road extension as well at the same time there. So that's more just for the investigation design aspects of it as compared to any physical works.
Thank you very much. And page 98 in regards to the Kingborough Sailing Club works, I'm just wondering if there's any estimation of when that would be occurring.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. That's probably going to be later in the financial year, mainly because apart from finalising the design there, there's likely to be some approvals that will be needed, both internally and externally, which will push those timeframes out.
Thank you.
Councillor Bastone.
Thank you. My question is to Mr. Breen. On page 89, in the summary operating statement, corporate services, material and services more than treble what the budget was to year to date, and I was just wondering why that is.
Mr. Breen.
Yes, through you, Mayor. What that relates to is essentially to IT software maintenance. So in previous years that's been spread out across the 12 months. For this year there was the Navision, which is the new finance package system, that was a January to December software maintenance arrangement. So at the halfway part of the year we called that a prepayment, and then we bring it back in July. So it's really just a timing difference in regards to when the bills are coming through.
Thank you.
Councillor Grace.
In our revenue, I haven't noted what page, so please forgive me. Just a report. What have we actually lost on maintenance work on Bruny Island with the sealing of the neck and Lunawanna Road? How much does that affect our income for the island?
Mr. Reeve or Mr. Breen?
Through you, Mayor. Look, I don't think it's made a huge difference, bearing in mind that we're just in the process of actually finalising a contract with DSG for the maintenance of their roads. Even though that hasn't been finalised, there's been some extra service level provision they've actually wanted council to actually do. So it hasn't actually really affected us too much from a revenue perspective. Obviously, the maintenance of that area has actually gone down there because it was an area there that routinely had to be gravelled and graded. But overall, revenue-wise, not much effect.
Any other questions or comments? And that, ask Councillor Westwood to sum up. Jeez, I think she doesn't need to. So the motion is that Council endorses the attached financial report as at 30 July 2020. Moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, carried unanimously. We now move on to page 102 is confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. The motion is that in accordance with Regulation 15 of Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for a leave of absence and tender report, AB 2009, Road F Construction, Kingston Park. Looking for a mover and a seconder. Moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously, and that means that the open session of council is adjourned at 6:39 p.m. I want to say to everybody watching online through Facebook, thanks very much for being with us again. We look forward to seeing you again on the second Monday of September. Have a great night.